Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. My name is Mark R. LePage. Thanks for joining me here today at Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 297, and Jim Rohne is reinventing architecture at SoLiquid. We talk about that here today at Entree Architect Podcast. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, ARCAT, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM specifications, and so much more at arcat.com, and FreshBooks, the cloud-based accounting software that makes running your small firm easy, fast, and secure. Spend less time on accounting and more time doing the work you love. Jim Rohne, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Jim Rohne is a founder, co-founder, and CEO of SoLiquid, a startup specialized in large-scale additive manufacturing for AEC and design industries. SoLiquid was created in 2018 to rethink the way we design, fabricate, and build by 3D printing in suspension. Sounds pretty advanced. I can't wait to get into this conversation because I want to know more about what that is. I know what 3D printing is, and I understand a little bit about what you're doing. Jim is an architect specialized in virtual design and construction strategies, BIM processes, and digital fabrication. And he's a member of the current cohort working with our friends over at 060, the AEC Accelerator. Last week, we spoke with another member from this year's cohort at 060, Andrew Zukoski from join.build. So you can go back and listen to Andrew's interview as well. And the week before, we spoke with the co-founder of 060, Herman Aparicio. And so you can learn all about 060 and what they do 2 weeks ago. And so it's really exciting to hear all about these innovative ideas that are being advanced over at 060. And so today I'm here with Jim Rohne of SoLiquid. Jim, I shared a little bit about you in that intro, but I want to do what we do every week. Go back to your origin story. Go back to where you discovered architecture, what inspired you to become an architect, and give us that story from that point to where you find yourself today with SoLiquid.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I started to study architecture, it was 10 years ago. And I was more on the scientific side back in high school. I started to think about how to build tomorrow's building, and that's how I got into architecture. And I got into this Parisian school, and straight away I decided to switch to the computational design side. And that's there was a special department there called digital knowledge, where I used to learn about all this parametric design and computational design approach. And that was also a side of the project where was meant to learn about how robotic fabrication could be apprehended on the architectural side. And so I did my master there. I went a year in Finland to know about what was done in other countries. Came back and started to work. I spent 2 years in Jean Nouvel's office, where I used to start project on the beam processes aspect. And then I joined Gary Technologies for 2 years, where I had more on a consultant job, working on automation, optimization, and everything related to delivery system implementation.
And so when you were at Gary's, were Gary Technologies, was that in the U.S. or in Europe?
Based in Paris, yeah.
Yeah, so it was Paris office, because you're based in Paris. I forgot to mention that in the bio. Hence the French accent when people are, which sounds great to me because I'm a LePage. So reminds me of my grandfather who also spoke very similar. So you were working with Gary Technologies. How did that lead to Soliquid?
Well, the main aspect of the work at Gary Tech was, it's focused on digital to fabrication approach. So there's this constant link to how you reach the fabrication aspect and how you really build. It's not only design, but how you make it, happen in construction. So I think this link is, it's pretty logic because robotic fabrication and what we do at Soliquid is also tackling these issues. And it's always questioning how you can build with other logics, other processes. And it's very linked to what we did at Gary Tech in some way.
So what was your role at Gary Technologies? So I just just for a little bit of context, Gary Technologies is the arm of Frank Gehry's office, Gehry Architects, and all those amazing buildings that Frank Gehry and his firm have built throughout the world relied on the technology and the computer systems that they developed at Gehry Technologies. They spun that off as a separate company. Today, it's owned by Trimble, who is actually how the whole 060 thing happened as well. So go back and listen to that episode to learn all about that. But that's some context. So what was your role, Jim, at Gehry Technologies?
So I was more on the consultant side, which is very large. It's very large, but what I used to do there mostly is addressing some very complex projects. And like it could be related to very different parts of the job, right? Meaning automation processes, like how you make a team working more efficiently with processes that can be automated. It could be optimization on complex envelope projects, for example, how you end up producing thousands of different panels on an envelope with a limited amount of time. So how you can optimize all this. It means implementing new processes, developing some scripts about how you can actually generate all the execution files for these panels, and then more. So another aspect which is related to BIM, build information modeling, and it was more how you can manage teams on these aspects and help them, producing. Decent model that can be actually used on the whole life cycle of the project. Yeah,
that's very interesting. I never really, I understood that Gehry Technologies really was the technology that was developed was required to build the buildings that were built. But I always looked at it from a technical side of point, a point of view is how do you technically get a building to look like that and keep the water out and stand up and do all the things that architecture needs to do. And so I always looked at Gehry Technologies as doing that. But it's very interesting that you're talking also about how do you do that in an efficient way? How do you create a building that every panel is different? Literally every single panel is a different size, different shape, different dimension. how do you do that efficiently to the point where it can be economically built? Because that's the other half of those buildings is, yes, they're super expensive, but they were built. So they were built at a level, you know, the efficiencies and the economies that the technology could bring to those buildings allowed them to be built.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean the way we actually measured the success of what we were doing at Gary Tech in the end is mostly the cost of how we could optimize the cost of construction in the end, and that's what the clients that were asking for our services were asking mostly. So in the end, that's pretty much it. So the range of things we were doing are pretty vast, and I think it's still evolving, and even more. I mean, since Gary Tech joined Trimble, but that's pretty much it.
Are you still working with Gary Technologies, or are you 100% with Soliquid?
No, I'm 100% with Soliquid now. Yeah.
So how did Gary Technologies lead you to Soliquid?
As I was saying, most of the aspects we are dealing with at Gary Technologies are really related to fabrication, and what we're doing at Soliquid is trying to make possible the fabrication of elements that couldn't be easily built before. So that's in the way. At Soliquid, we're trying to bring some new solutions for the construction industry, and being able to produce some non-standard elements that couldn't be easily built before. So I guess that's the link is here. The way we were trying to find solution at Gary Technologies to make possible very complex buildings is some way finding the answer in what we're developing at Soliquid.
So explain what Soliquid is and what you're trying to accomplish.
Yes, so Soliquid is specialized in developing a large scale 3D printing process with the characteristic that we are printing in a gel matrix. So the main difference with the layer by layer technology that is usually known is that we print that matrix, and the fact that we print in this is that you can actually print in 3D without having the constraint of building your element layer by layer. So you can actually extrude in the gel with a maximum freedom and being able to produce very complex geometries without the need of using expensive support.
So I think many of us have seen either in person or on video the idea of a 3D printer printing in space, traditionally, how it started is that 3D printing was layer by layer, right? So you had to start at a surface at the bottom, and just the printer would run over and it would create a layer of solid material over and over and over again. And eventually that would build up to become an object. We all see that in the small, you know, plastic 3D printers that we've seen. That has developed into larger scale. They do that as well. But what you're doing at Soliquid is that you're creating, and I think many of us have seen the small plastic versions of, you know, 3D printing in space, where there's the nozzle and the plastic is running out and it's creating this 3D form in space in real time. You're doing that at a very large scale. So are you at the point where you are actually building structures in space like that, or is it in development?
It's the goal. It's the ultimate goal, yeah, of what we're doing. But it's still under development. The thing is, when we started the Soliquid with my other co-founder Amory, we are both architects. So what we wanted to do is it was obvious we wanted to do that for construction. So it was meant to be large scale from the very beginning of it. We faced some big issues, of course, because starting from a very small element that you can build in a matrix and being able 1 year later to make it out of concrete in a bigger container, and it raises a lot of issues, a lot of challenges that we are trying to address. And it's actually start to work really well now, but still a lot of development to do. But yes, the main goal is to be able to build these elements for the construction site. We always be on the prefab strategy, because we are printing in a box. Yeah, just imagine like a box of which is filled with gel. So we'll be always limited that by this volume of gel in which we are printing. So that's why the strategy will always be related to prefabrication. We're not going to build on site like the layer by layer technology, for example, could be done in a couple of years, but it's meant to be for construction and large scale.
So these are robots in a factory creating these pre-manufactured elements that would then be modular and then brought to a site and assembled on site. That's the intent.
Yeah. Yes, that's the intent. And we're actually pushing pushing that forward, in the sense that, yeah, for now we have a factory, a very small factory where we're actually producing these elements. So we have a 6-axis robots on which we plug our extruder, and we have these big containers where we print. But one of the main objectives is to actually be able to produce in the future some small factories that could be easily shipped very close to building sites, and you could actually produce there thousands of elements that could then be assembled on site. And you could actually reduce the cost of transport, and all these aspects could be optimized.
So right now, the material that you're using is a gel. Is that what you said?
That's the matrix. So it's what is used as support. That the gel we are. So imagine a box filled with gel, and then our extruder put some concrete in it. So we have. We make the geometries out of concrete. The concrete solidifies in the gel, and then we extract it from the gel, and we have these complex element that can be directly extracted and assembled on site.
And how long does it take to create an element, that you're creating now?
Depending on the size of it, because we are. Of course, we are still limited by the size of the boxes we are using, but the printing process is in that sense is very fast, because we are not printing surfactic elements. The main idea is to optimize the way we use the material that we print. The idea here is reducing the amount of material that you put for construction elements, because it's one of the challenges of construction today is how you actually reduce the quantity of material that you use for buildings, which is directly linked with the cost of a building, and it have and carbon emission, for example. So it has a lot of consequences, and the way we try to print is our elements is very optimized, and in a sense it's more like a skeleton of a constructive element than the element itself. Just imagine like a 3D mesh of an element that is more made of linear connections than a surfacic one. So yeah.
What's the gel made out of? What is the material?
It's part of the development. So I cannot tell much about it. But it's the advantage of the gel we are using is that it's it's first it's not nocive, so we can keep it, and it's very very stable material, so we can reuse it. And
so that's one of my next question.
Yes, that's one of the main interest of what we are trying to develop, because this gel is reusable for many, many prints. We can keep it for months. And that's the idea behind here, because that's where the make difference is made, the biggest difference is made. The gel is used as a support, but can be reused. So it's adaptive in some sense, because the gel, you know, reforms after the, when you extract the piece, you can reprint right after. You just need to mix it, filter it a bit, and but it's part of the process. And but it's reusable for months, and that's the main interest of the technology.
Very interesting. So instead of like a wood mold or some other material that we would traditionally use for concrete molds, you've essentially designed a mechanical system and a material that can now create molds quickly and in any shape and form that you want, and that material can be reused for other molds.
Yeah, exactly.
Very interesting. We'll be right back to our conversation after this quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entre Architect, RCAT, and FreshBooks. Have you been to RCAT.com recently? It's the number one most used website for finding building product information, and it has a new look. RCAT has updated their site to get you the data that you want that much faster. Their search now allows you to choose what kind of information you want, like CAD, BIM specifications, and you only get those results. Just that data, that's all you're going to get. RCAT is also constantly fine-tuning their search engine to make sure you keep getting the information that you ask for, fast and easy. Of course, it's still free and it requires no registration, not even a login. It doesn't require any email. It does not require any money. It's free. If you need building product information and you haven't yet used RCAT, it's time to go check it out. If you've never tried RCAT, head over to RCAT.com and try it out. You'll be glad that you did. That's RCAT.com, ARCAT.com. Go check it out and let them know that Entre Architect sent you. In case you are wondering, 192 hours works out to about 2 business days every month. 2 business days. Well, why the math? If you're an architect and you're using FreshBooks cloud accounting software, that's the amount of admin time that you can save every year. How? Well, FreshBooks is so fast and so easy to use that it changes the way that you deal with your paperwork. FreshBooks is the simplest way to be more productive, more organized, and most importantly, it will get you paid quickly. You can create and send really professional-looking invoices in under 30 seconds. And when you email a client an invoice, FreshBooks can show you whether they've seen it, which puts an end to that guessing game on, you know, whether they got that invoice or not. If waiting for a client's check in the mail is slowing down that cash flow, with literally 2 clicks, you can set yourself up to receive online payments. Oh, and your clients, they will love paying by credit card straight from their invoice. FreshBooks helps you avoid having that awkward talk with your clients about past due payments. FreshBooks automates late payment email reminders. This is my favorite part. So you can spend less time chasing payments and more time working on your projects. If you have any questions whatsoever, FreshBooks award-winning customer service is amazingly helpful. They're super friendly and they have zero attitude. Plus, a real live person usually answers in 3 rings or less. To claim your month-long unrestricted free trial, go to entrearchitect.com/freshbooks and enter Entre Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's entrearchitect.com/freshbooks. RCAT and FreshBooks. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entre Architect community. What would you say is the biggest barrier to accomplishing your goals?
We have a lot of you know, Amaury and I, we're, as I was saying, we're architects, so we have kind of the same background. We used to study computational design and robotic fabrication, but still we're not engineers in the sense, like, we have some limits in the way we can apprehend I'll go into detail, but the rheology of material that we use, it's you know, you need, it's very complex because you need to find the right balance between the, like, the viscosity of the gel we used and the material that we are printing in it. So it's very complex. We've been we've been developing that for a year, but now we know that we're reaching some limits in terms of comprehension of this whole complex system. And we're gonna have to enlarge the team and work with engineers that actually know all these small details and can help us on bringing the technology forward.
Yeah. So what does your team look like now? Is it just the two of you?
Yeah. For now, it's just the two of us. Yeah.
Interesting. Because you've gotten pretty far as two architects who have this crazy dream of reinventing the construction industry. I mean, you're literally that's what you're doing. I mean, you've invented a new way of constructing buildings, and you've done it, solo so far. So you need to bring on engineers. Would you also need chemists and the rest of that to sort of, continue to improve and develop the gel?
Yes. Probably. Yeah, there are a lot of, it's interesting, there are a lot of universities that start working on these topics. I mean, it's already something that is pretty known. It's a complex gel, so they have a very specific rheology and we're going to have to work with chemists as well to push it forward.
What's your timeline look like in terms of getting to the next step? Or basically, in order to build the team that you need, are you funded? Because I know that 060 doesn't fund. They help you with resources, connections, but they don't fund. So how are you funded?
For now, we've been working with we have Organism in France that helps, that give you subvention for R&D projects and innovative technologies, and so we've been living with this for now for a year. So that's how we tried to begin this R&D process for a year. And that allowed us, to patent what we're doing, to make a lot of prototypes, demos, and make it, what we had imagined at the very beginning come true. But now we are in a kind of a tricky phase because we need to find some funds to be able to go further. Yes, so we are in contact with industrial and investors and to talk about these topics because it's a part of our future and we won't be able to work with that. Yes.
So do you imagine venture capital where it's equity based, that somebody would come in and take a piece of the company and give you some money to continue working?
Yeah. We've been thinking a lot about it with Amaury, and it's probably a good way to go with that because construction tech, and especially when you're working with hardware, is very expensive. Yeah. Because it's in that sense it's very different to what software technology could do. I cannot work from home with my laptop and develop it. Like it's always you need to invest in machines. You need to have a space for that. So it's a lot of it represents a big amount, so that's something you cannot do alone, and especially when you want to go forward like this, because we have this small production factory where we started doing this, and we had this industrial partner called IG3, which is doing layer by layer, large scale layer by layer technology, but now we have to push it forward, and funding is a good way to reach this.
Are the elements that are being created today, are they structural at this point, or are they decorative panels and non-structural elements?
So we started with we are working with concrete that are very, very performant because the way we print is more looks like skeletons more than actually finished elements. So that's why we directly started working with very, very performant concrete. But it's to make it actually structural, first we need to run a lot of tests, and that's a big part of the development as well, to be able to make sure that all the connections that we make in the gel are sufficient to provide actual structural performances. And but the structural aspects are a big part of the development. We need to find also other ways to be able to to wire these elements, to put metal in it, maybe like the the OGL prefabrication is doing it. So we need to find some strategies to reach this as well.
Right. I mean, we all know that concrete doesn't work very well when you try to pull it apart. It works well when you compress it, but it doesn't work well when you're pulling it apart. And so your first thought is like, well, how do you get reinforcing into something that's being developed with a gel? And so I'm assuming that's part of the challenges that you're having and part of the development that you're working on.
Yes. Concrete is usually used in the traditional way. You use rebars to do this. Right. So you put metal in the concrete, and that's how it's reinforced. But the challenge for us is to be able to do that during the printing process. So it's something we are thinking about it and trying to develop, being able to put like a wire cable in the concrete while we are printing. So that could be one of the strategy, including some metal parts as well while it's printing. So that's a lot of a discussion we have at the moment, try to find the best strategy to make it actual structural and be able to use it as a on site and making it true. Yeah.
So not only do you need to reinvent machines and reinvent the process of forming concrete, but you need to reinvent concrete.
But that's exactly what you were talking about. Like, concrete is very good in compression, and the way we use it is totally different. We make some very complex geometries. Of course, the compression is not the way we use it. We use it in traction, flexion, and then that's how the elements we are doing are solicited, and that's why it's very challenging as well. So I was talking about rebars and finding a way to include metal pieces in what we print. But another strategy is working on as you were saying, on the concrete itself. There's a lot of development as well, not that we are doing, but that companies like cement companies are doing now, to kind of hybrid cement with other components, like resins or this stuff. So of course it makes it more expensive, but at the same time, if you are able to reduce the quantity of material that you are using, I mean, you could find a balance here. So that's also in the material side, something that we are trying to push. How you could mix cement with other components to make it actually structural in compression, but also in traction and flexion.
Yeah, super super interesting. The potentials of what you're trying to accomplish is really fascinating. What does it take mentally to start a company like this? Because this is not just build something better or start a construction company or this is reinventing the way we build buildings, which we've been doing for thousands of years. How does it, from a mindset point of view, how do you say, okay, we're going to start a company that is going to reinvent the way we build buildings? Does that take a lot of courage, or do you just say, well, this is just the next step in where I've been and where I'm going?
Good question. Well, actually on this, I'm gonna give much credit to Amaury, my partner. So we met, him and I, we met in my former architecture school. We were actually giving some courses about robotic fabrication. And there we had a lot of students, and each time we were giving this course, we had the challenge of building some complex constructive systems, because the students were modding some crazy structures, and we had to make it happen. And the tools we were asking them to use was a 6x6 robot. Like, each time you had a different thematic, but each time you had to use this robot. And every time it was the same. The amount of time we spent trying to 3D mill the cast that we're supposed to use for you know, for creating these construct elements was taking so much time that we never had the time to finish the project. It was very interesting, but each time we ran out of time. So at the end of that, we started, Amaury and I started to think about how we could change this and finding some new ways of addressing these topics of creating complex, you know, the rise of digital tools is making the buildings more and more complex every time. You can see building envelopes in our cities today, they are always more complex. So we try to address this this topic in that sense, and trying to look at what had been done before. We ended up with that process that had been developed for medicine at the very beginning. So some scientists they tried to replicate the complexity of organic tissues, and at the time it was 7 or 10 years ago, they didn't have the process to do it. So they started printing in gel. That's how everything started. And when we look at that, we like, okay, that could be an answer. So Amaury started to work on that part. We were at the very small scale at that time. So we're building in a small body, was 50 centimeters, and trying to make it out of resin that we were. And when we saw that this process was working for what we were intending, we straight away, it didn't take time to before we launched we started to think about it seriously, but yeah, it took a few months, and that was it. In June 2018 we started Soliquid.
So it was just the evolution, it was just the next step that you needed to take to get to what you wanted to do.
Yes.
So just never looked back, just kept looking forward. What's the next
exactly.
step?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. I asked that question because I think a lot of architects, because we're creative people, come up with ideas, you know, come up with these solutions to problems that we have in the world, or come up with these new ways of doing things. And I think so many of us just end with that idea. You know, we have this great idea, but look at what it would take to accomplish that idea. And so when I have somebody like you to be able to talk to and share with the rest of the community, I love asking questions like that, because I think it encourages and inspires others to maybe take that leap as well, and to see where it goes. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, and actually, I'm gonna come back on what you were saying, but all my architects friend that I know, they're also in this creative mindset, and that's very interesting. They never give up on a world that they could reach. Each time they are addressing a project and they have this new idea of how I could make this. I have a lot of friends that actually they make this experimentation. Like, it's not okay. It's not always starting a company and trying to do it, but they have this idea of making, so they are experimenting and trying to find new ways of doing it, even if it's like taking one weekend and going and try to build my own stuff and see how it could work. So it's not always using what is already industrialized, but trying to find new strategies of making what I want to do come true. Yes.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating. And I also think that you know, there's lots of talk in the industry of architecture, the profession of architecture, that if we don't evolve, we're going to go away. We'll become obsolete as architects in the traditional sense of building designers. And when I speak with somebody like you and I look at the generation of architects that are coming up into the profession, I have lots of confidence that we're going to be okay, and we will evolve. The architectural profession will evolve. But people like you who are inventors and creators and architects, you're practicing architecture. You're creating, designing buildings and creating tools to build those buildings. And so architects are not going anywhere. We're just going to evolve, and we're going to find new ways of taking the skills and the talents that we have as architects and applying them to the problems we have throughout the world.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, I totally agree. And there is this fear today, you know, that all the tools that are, so we are talking a lot about BIM and the fact that all these new tools are going to make the architecture profession disappear. But I would take it on the other side and say that, you know, being able to keep the control on all this is what we really should do. And that's how architects are going to be able to always stay in this creative mindset and be able to, I mean, that's where we're good at, right? Because you have a lot of profession now around us that can do a lot of things. So architecture is a small part of, architects are a very small part of the construction world, but where we're good at is this creative mindset. And I don't think we have a lot of profession that could do that. So we need to keep control on all these tools, all these processes to be able to stay here. And I don't think that's the rise of this digital tool is going to make us disappear.
Yeah, often. No, I think we'll become strengthened by it, because I don't think it's going to be this massive shift that we're all going to have to change from what we're doing to something else. I think it will be an evolution. And I think the generations that come up into the profession, it's already there. The mindset of being the entrepreneur and being the inventor and being the creator, because the tools are there and they have grown up with those tools available to them. And so to be able to take an idea and say, well, what if I just did this? They have the tools to just go do it. And so it's not going to be this big, massive industrial shift in the way we practice architecture. It'll be an evolution. It'll just be the way that architects practice. When they have these ideas, like yourself, you'll just pursue the idea and continue and develop new ways of doing what we do.
Absolutely.
So, Jim, thank you. This is super inspirational. If I asked you what was one thing that a small firm architect could do today to build a better business for tomorrow, what would you tell architects who are listening?
Well, actually, I'll go back to the topic we were talking about right before, is that we need to understand that having the control on a project and making what we want to build come true is what we need to fight for. And so whether we are a small architecture firm or a very big office, that's the main challenge. So the tool we have at our disposal now, I think, make us we need to empower all our process with this and take control on that and don't give up. So that's how we could do. And I think all the new processes and it's part of the parametric design, the computational, the generative design, all these approaches that could make us save a lot of time on very repetitive processes that is part of the process of constructing. Make big project very addressable by small firms. So that's where we should fight for.
Yeah. Soliquid.io. It's SOLIQUID, like Soliquid.io. You can go check them out there and see what they're doing. You can also follow Jim and his team on social media. Search for Soliquid. Either Soliquid or Soliquid_IO. Soliquid_IO. Jim, is there any video anywhere of anything that you guys are doing so we can see an example of the work that's happening at Soliquid?
Yes, there are. So you can check on our website, of course, Soliquid.IO, and on all the social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We have all the videos there. Yes.
All right. Well, we'll find some videos and we'll put them on the show notes for this episode. This is episode 296. So entrearchitect.com/episode296. We'll have links to the website and to social media. And we'll find some videos, because I think it's something that we need to see in order to clearly understand what you're trying to accomplish. So, Jim, this has been a fantastic conversation. I'm super motivated. I'm super inspired by what you're doing. I thank you for what you're doing. I appreciate your contributions to the profession and the leadership that you have showing us the way to the future of architecture. So thank you for sharing your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you very much, Mark. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to episode 296 with Jim Ronay of Soliquid. If you want to share this show with a friend, if you want to share the link, if you felt there was some value here. I think this has been a fantastic episode. The inspiration and motivation that I have today after speaking with Jim is just off the charts. So this is an episode that you may want to share with some friends to give them some motivation, them some inspiration to take that first and next step, to take some of those ideas that you have and go do it. Go make it happen. So this is episode 296. You can check out all the show notes, share the link, entrearchitect.com/episode296. entrearchitect.com/episode296. Hey, did you know that we redesigned entrearchitect.com, the homepage? You can check it out right now at entrearchitect.com. We redesigned it to provide you quick and easy access to everything we're doing here at Entree Architect to help small firm entrepreneur architects build better businesses. If you're looking for answers, we have solutions for you at entrearchitect.com. Go check it out today and let me know what you think. I really would love to know what you think. If there's anything missing, let me know, because we really want to make that homepage something that you visit on a regular basis to provide access to all the different resources that we're doing, to this podcast, to the blog, to all the membership opportunities. Go check it out right now at entrearchitect.com. Hey, and you can also download our free profit tools right there on entrearchitect.com. 3 financial calculators for free and 3 video training sessions for you. They're waiting there, right there at the top of entrearchitect.com. Go check them out. Love, learn, share what you know. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.